It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Clexton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
He's pounded down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say?
And welcome to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along Tom Clexton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. The show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, serving Mobile since 1939. Alabama Pipe and Supply, Competition Head Service, and Ed Seafood Shed.
And Fabulous Seafood Shed, and some news is in the wind.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so we'll be hearing something about the Ed's Seafood Shed here pretty soon.
Oh, yeah. Something new's always in the works with that group.
So, oh, they always got, two or three other venues open up this year or so.
Yeah.
But, you know, the biggest problem people have is doing anything now is getting staff.
Right.
But they're out. They're really hustling on that in the culinary schools and all the Bishop State and all the other schools that are around and got people, coming in and training and working for them. So they haven't said, but I just feel like they might be training a staff.
Right.
For the new restaurant.
Well, and that's, you got to constantly train anyway. I mean, we're all in that same
mode. Oh, yeah, we got to stay in that mode, yeah.
You know, because it's that way in any business anymore is you've got to constantly go out and look for new talent because, trying to keep people.
Right.
It's an issue. It's an issue. People don't,
Well,
I'm not going to say everybody, but there's a whole bunch of people that don't want to work.
Yes. And at the same time, there's only so many people in the trades that we're familiar with in the automotive side of it, and I'm sure it's as well in the other industries.
Right.
And, you got companies that they just get hurt so bad, they'll just go rob somebody and pay them more money an hour, a guarantee or whatever.
Right. I've never been a fan to try and go after someone else's employees.
Well, they'll do it for him. They'll do it. Do it against him.
They're going to do it.
They're
going to do it to me down the road if I try and buy them away from someone else.
Yeah, the next guy comes along with another 30 cents or 50 cents or $1 or $1.25 an hour. Then $50 a week is $60 a week or so. Buys groceries, man. Helps buy groceries.
Oh, yeah.
Or gas for the car.
Yeah, or gas to get to work. But
make a damn payment on a tank of gas.
Yep. Well, and I've always had better luck with just being fair with the guys that work for me. Pay them a fair wage and
treat them right.
Treat them right. Give them the training that they need.
And decent benefits, yeah.
Give them the benefits. Make sure there's work there for them to do.
Don't you have some openings out there?
We've got a couple openings out there. We have some, at least one entry level, and I'd love to have a level tech as well. So
A
level.
Eight?
A.
A, B, C,
and D level.
A tech, okay.
An A tech.
So, ooh, okay. Y'all get sophisticated with all this terminology. I thought you just wanted a good guy.
Right.
That knew something about the damn stuff.
Right. But, it's a constant battle. We're always looking, and it's a tough market. And, I tell people all the time, if you're wanting to get in this and you plan on, or you if you're doing this now and you plan on being in this business for 15 or 20 more years, you better get on board with electronics.
Right.
You got to understand it. You got to know it. You got to know how to work it, because it's everything we do is electrical. There's no part of that car that doesn't have some kind of electrical tied to it.
And that's where we need all these game playing nerds back off in these bedrooms. Come on out here and let us apply some automotive technology to that computer you're playing with in there.
And I was in class 2 days last week in New Orleans, and it was basically a diagnostic approach class.
Oh, really?
And they're trying to
Y'all got some new torques.
Well, they're trying to teach you a thought pattern on where do you go first. You know, instead of just unplugging and probing and wires and connectors and all that kind of stuff right off the bat, they want you to, you know, check codes, understand what's not working, go understand the system. You know, if you don't understand what's going on, go read the circuit description operation, look at the diagram, try and understand what it needs to work, and then you can go and start doing some preliminary checks without having
to. Don't start R&R and removing and replacing parts and pieces, see if that fixes it.
Well,
and
know,
so we see that in a lot of the independent shops that don't have the technology.
Right. Well, what we get into now is these cars have so many different circuits on them, and that's why we have the communication systems in these vehicles, is they can't hardwire everything that needs to happen because the car wouldn't be able to carry around the wiring harness.
Right, right.
So they're having to put multiple modules in the car and have them talking back and forth to the other modules in the car. And so your body control module is going to tell the chassis control module and or the air condition and or the engine control module to do something, yeah, or vice versa. So they can do that multiple functions off of two wires.
Hmm.
Yeah. So they're using those two wires as their communication wires that go in between these. Now, back in the day when they first come out with the computers, you know, the early ones, 80, 81, 82, 34, in that area, there was one computer. It didn't need to talk to nobody else. So there weren't any communication systems. But then when they started getting your engine control and you had a brake control and or a transmission control module involved, and even the ignition cluster, I mean the instrument cluster, all had to enter work with the engine control module, they had to be able to talk to each other. So that's when they started getting into communication buses. And it was just a one wire connected between, and they talked back and forth on that one wire. Well, now we have up to 8 or 9 different communication systems on one vehicle. And it's all the systems talking at different speeds, on different lines, on, you know, about different things. They're, you know, they can't talk over themselves on just two wires, you know, like that, because it would get too garbled, you know.
Well, okay, let me interrupt you a minute. Why would they be talking to each other? They're not telling jokes.
No.
What are they looking for? Does one of them see a perimeter of voltage from a component that doesn't really have a computer hooked to it, but it might have voltage going to it?
Well,
that will send a signal back to a computer or a module. Are they getting an erroneous reading maybe? And they're trying to diagnose themselves, or
not necessarily. I mean, it's not about them trying to diagnose each other or whatever. I mean, they do a little bit of that just to give us clues as
right.
to what's going on.
That's what I was trying to get out of you.
But what's happening is, just say a simple system, the power windows on a car.
Okay.
Nowadays, you have smart window motors. Okay, so it's its own module. You have the window switch on that door. You have the switch on the master switch on the driver's door. You also have a body control module that is controlling things. So all of these systems actually have to talk back and forth to each other. The body control module and the window switch may talk on a low speed data bus, but the window switch at that point needs to tell the motor to do something, and it's going to talk back and forth between those two on what they call a LIN bus, which is a local interconnect Network.
LIN.
Yeah, LIN. And it's just basically a local network that is talking, you know, just between those two components. So at that point, it's just those two components looking at each other. Yeah, so it and that's one of the more simple systems.
Okay.
Yeah. There's you know, your traction control system in a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's going to have the chassis control, the brake control, and the engine control module, as well as the transmission control module, all having to intertwine to make this work. So, anyway, it looks like we've run up to our break here. We're going to let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
Somebody please call and ask him a question. He's burning my brain up.
One note song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do when you're riding.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, you've heard the story of the hot rod race that fatal day when the Ford and the Mercury went out to play.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. But we were talking a little bit about communication systems on the car. I know I'm probably getting over a lot of people's
heads. Well, yeah, you're getting over a lot of people's heads, including mine.
But you know.
Well, let me define something before you get started. I was trying to bring out something there a while ago about, because I really didn't understand, you know, the terminology on the one hand, the technical on the other, and how that brain or the brains in the cars work. But during the break, you defined it for me, and I think it will simplify some of the things that we're talking about. That is, what I was talking about, that the module, one module downline is checking on another module upline and trying to diagnose itself. But in essence, they're not trying to diagnose each other as much as, from what you're saying, they're giving each other a health check.
Right, right.
They, in other words, if the body control module goes out,
mm-hmm.
It won't individually send a signal because it's out.
Right, right.
But the other units down the line from it that it controls
mm-hmm.
or forwards information back and forth to.
Right.
Starts checking on it to say, this guy's got Alzheimer's or something, you know. We're going to send a health check on him.
Somebody send somebody over there and wake him up.
Right, yeah, wake him up. That dude's gone to sleep, you know.
Right.
He's had some oxy or something, and he's out of his head.
Right.
But anyway, they do run a health check on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they don't get the right signal back, then they have the authority to throw a code.
Right. And it's called an environmental identifier. Basically, each module sends out a message, and it's, hey, I'm the body control module. Here's the VIN number vehicle I'm supposed to be in. You know, does everybody agree that I'm the one that's supposed to be here?
Right.
Know?
Okay.
Then
am I in the network?
Yeah. Am I in the right car?
Right.
You know,
okay.
You know, I had a little too much last night. I'm not sure if I climbed in the right car.
Wait a minute now.
Yeah.
That being said, you can't take that body module or that body control module out of that car after it has been programmed and put it in another car.
Right. And those days have ended. You know, we used to be able to take an engine control or transmission control module and swap it from another vehicle
right.
and see if it fixed it.
Right.
You can't even take that module and plug it into another car because you have just killed both cars.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, you know, as soon as it sees that it was in the wrong vehicle, it puts it in theft mode.
Uh-oh.
You know, because, you know, it figures somebody may have walked up to a car and decided to put a module in to try and bypass the theft, and as soon as that doesn't match up with everybody else that's in there, it's going to shut it down.
Okay. In other words, so if we've got a car, even if we're really knowledgeable with the the terminology and the do-it-yourself backgrounds and whatevers. We find out what module is, we can't go out to the salvage yard and get the module out of one of the other cars and reprogram it and put it in and go head on.
Well, and the thing I run into quite a bit now is a lot of these, you know, independent car lots or, and even individuals, they'll have a stereo go bad. Just say the radio goes bad in the car. Well, they'll grab the radio out of a wrecking yard or buy one from a wrecking yard.
Right.
And they'll go and bring it to us and ask, they'll go put it in, then bring the car to us and say, hey, can you program this to the car? It's in theft lock.
Right.
It's like, can't do it. What do you mean can't do it? It's like, it won't let me do it.
Well, it's not your control.
It's not my control because I have to go through. When we program a module to a vehicle, if it already has a VIN number in there, which is a vehicle identification number in it, it won't let me change that anymore.
Damn it, boy.
Yeah, so it's they're getting a little smart for their own good sometimes, I believe. But, doing it so you can't. You know, it does nobody any good to steal a radio anymore, you know, or...
Right, because it won't work in another car.
Components, because it won't work. I mean, you can do whatever you want to with it. You'll have to send it to a repair facility, get it rebuilt. They'll wipe it out, and then you can go put it in a car, get it programmed, and it'll work.
I wouldn't want to pay that bill either, though.
Well, none of it's...
Get it repaired.
None of it's cheap.
Freight to send it off. So, the salvage yards then are, they could sell tires and rims and used batteries and fenders and doors and can you sell an alternator? I mean, does an alternator
Well, the alternator would be okay. You know, and they can even sell the computers and modules out of the car, but what they have to do is they have to sell them to a rebuilding facility.
Okay.
They're still recycling all those components, but they can't sell them to the general public.
Okay.
Because it doesn't do them any good.
They sell them to the rebuilders.
They sell them to the rebuilders. Rebuilders, you repair them and then send them back out.
They put a new motherboard or whatever in it, and so that it's got a blank, a VIN number in it.
Right.
And then that way, if you get one of those from a rebuilder, and bring it to the car doctor.
Right.
To put in the car, then you're capable of doing that.
Then I'm capable of putting the correct information
but
in there for that vehicle.
Not a used piece out of another vehicle that hasn't been reserviced and repaired and rebuilt.
Right. And that's how, you know, most of the time if I have a failed radio or an OnStar module or, you know, it's one of those type modules that has to be programmed to the car. If I have one that's failed, we can pick up the phone, we can call a rebuild facility, and they can overnight one to us. And they're able to do that by getting back our old ones and also by buying, you know,
from the salvage yards
to completely refurbish, because you cannot request a new one, you know. If you wanted a brand new radio for a 2015 truck, you ain't gonna get it.
Huh?
It ain't out there.
What? I thought they're supposed to replace them for up to 10 years.
They do with remanufactured stuff.
Oh, so, with remanufactured stuff. But you're not gonna get it. So then, does that same thing apply to a motor?
Possibly. Possibly. You know, because a lot of times we don't know if we're getting a reman or a brand new, you know, when we're getting a motor. Transmissions, I can pretty much guarantee it's going to be a reman, unless it's a current model year,
Oh, really? Year. Very recent? No, yeah. Not even 2 years or 3 years?
No, I'm talking about 2022. That. You might get a new one. You know, it depends on how many they've gotten back yet.
Come on now. This is, you know, automobiles... But then when you're talking about a, you know, $60,000 to $160,000 car or truck or whatever.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, the thing is there's just not that many new ones out there. You know, they're building the new vehicles with them. They don't have an overabundance of brand new parts. If you want to buy a brand new cylinder head, sure, you can buy a brand new cylinder head. If you want to buy a brand new block, you can buy a brand new block. Well, I take that back. I think you can buy a block, maybe, but you can't buy all the short block assembly like you used to.
Really?
Good. Yeah, it's
well, you can't buy a brand new short block and refurbish your cylinder heads, right, and put it back in the vehicle.
Right. Yeah. That's Crap. Those days have passed. Which kind of goes along with, you know, what we were talking last week about competition head service and the machine shop,
right,
local
yeah.
machine shops.
Yeah.
That business, that's why a lot of that business has gone away for the dealerships, that we can't get the components that would make it necessary for us to send the heads to them to get them rebuilt.
Right.
Or any of those things. And they've made it to where the cylinder head is cheap enough. It's not cheap, but it's cheap enough to where you can buy a cylinder head. If the guides are wiped out and the seats are wiped out in it, you just buy a cylinder head and put new valves in it and put it back together, and you're good to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't have to spend that time, you know, spend the money and the time putting guides in.
Well, yeah, but a lot of us, that being said, a lot of us people and a lot of our people have classic cars, and we have the older model cars and trucks and things.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
We're still building our motors, and most of them, there's some electronic fuel control vehicles out there that still could be rebuilt. And all, but then that's where Dewey and his crew come in.
Right.
They're still able to build all this stuff. You know, people got farm equipment. They've got, got farm tractors.
Right.
And they've got all the source for that. But then there's still a lot of aftermarket stuff that are high-performance stuff that people are still trying to mess with. And, upgrading these 30s to 2000 or 1989 vehicles and all, you know.
Right.
And
right.
rebuilding motors and transmissions and stuff there. But
And all this stuff can be rebuilt. I'm not saying that they can't. Because, I mean, even like most of our replacement motors or whatever, for the rare occasion that we have to put one in, because it's those days of us putting motors in all the time are pretty over.
They just don't go bad.
They just don't go bad like they used to.
Right.
Most of those are remanufactured, so it can be rebuilt.
Right.
Because it's happening.
All right, yeah.
You know, but it's a little different for the local guy,
Right. Okay.
You know, it's usually a big repair facility that's doing hundreds of them a week.
Right.
So, yeah. But anyway, it sounds like we've run up against a break here. We're gonna let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
I'm looking through my windshield when the sun is coming up.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The Doctor is in.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Remco along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Before we carry on, I got a message here from Michelle, Rapid Ray's daughter.
All right.
Dr. Kevin, how can you tell if they actually put synthetic oil or synthetic blend, which is cheaper, in your car when you get your oil changed? You can drain it back out and send it to a lab and let them check it.
Yeah. That'd be the only way.
That'd be about the only way you'll ever know for sure.
Yeah, we would hope that people wouldn't be that dirty.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like at UJ, where I work, we don't even have, all of our pumps and everything are full synthetic. We don't even carry, semi-synthetic or a.
I don't think you would probably find it even at an oil shop.
And they probably have some, but, that's not a road they want to go down, if it gets down to it.
You could change the name on the front of the building.
Yeah.
You could catch it and prove it.
Right. It's just not worth the trouble. I mean, you're charging the customer for it. Let's move
you
on.
Got
do what you
got your profit built into it. Do it right. Get
right.
it over with.
I mean, I understand there's not a lot of profit in oil change, but you do make a little money off of it. It's not much, but it's just, what they say, stacking pennies.
Right.
You gotta get every piece of it. So,
well, it's all the add-on stuff that they sell you, the filters and other things that you're going to find where their money's made. Add-on items over and above what you went in there for.
Yeah, and you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but to me, it's a necessary evil just because I want to keep my customers out of someone else's shop.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's the biggest reason.
Well, if you're working on my car and you see something wrong with it that's going to cause me problems, I want you to tell me about it.
Right.
Whether I authorize you to do it or not, put it in writing and put it on my invoice and tell me what I need to get done and what your price is. Then if I decide to get it done and your price is what I'm satisfied with, then I'll come back to you.
Well, if I'm going to get my oil changed, I don't want it done at a place that doesn't pull the wheels and do the rotate or in that, or doesn't pick it up because it's sitting over a pit, so it never even the wheels never even leave the ground, where you can get into there and look and see if there's brake problems or chassis problems and all that, which you're not going to see if it's still sitting on the ground. So that's why I'm a big advocate for get your oil changed and get tires rotated at the same time. They got the tire. They'll have the tires off. It's a great time to look at the brakes. Great time to look at the suspension. Look for any other issues. Your tires need to be – we've got the oil changes spread out enough now that your tires need to be rotated that often anyway.
Right.
So, it should all be done one time.
We still have tie rod ends, and we still have camber and caster. We have wheel bearings, hub bearings.
Right.
And things of that nature. So there's a couple of ways to look at this. Let's see if I can say it right. Number one, for that car comes into that shop, there's probably a rule or an order from the owners and the management to check everything on it and see what needs to be fixed. They might let us do some of that.
Right.
Okay? Now, if it's mine, I want them to check it because I don't want them – it's something happened to me 3 weeks later down the road that I didn't know about. I don't happen to have a rack at my house.
Right.
I don't happen to pull the tires and rims off of my cars anymore.
Yeah.
So do it. Make me a list. Just, check everything you're going to check. And if you find something wrong, make me a list of it. And, give me a average price or a possible price of what you're going to charge me, and let's move forward with it.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's the whole point of taking somebody that you trust and to look at. I want them to look at more than just the things that they sell.
Right.
You go to a place that's a quick service oil change only, and they're not doing rotates because they don't have the facilities to do it. They're going to look at they're going to change your oil, the filter. They're going to look at your cabin air filter, your air filter.
Right.
And they're going to try and save – they may try and save some flushes.
Right.
Yeah.
Flushes.
And probably won't even look at the belt that much because they don't put them on.
They don't.
They don't do that kind of mechanical work.
Okay. So, well, that's probably above there.
Yeah. But, and that's just what – they're going to look at the stuff that they sell.
Right.
And at that point – no, I'm sorry. Let me get somebody that can look at the whole vehicle if need to be. So.
But, if you do have a problem, tell me about it.
Right.
Give me the courtesy of telling you about it. If you ever want me to darken your door again, and right. If you want me to shut my mouth up and not tell everybody how you screwed me, you know what I mean? And it's funny how you could take one guy that's really, really happy, and he's probably not going to tell anybody about it, but you take one guy that's really, really mad, he's going to tell everybody he sees.
He'll stop somebody walking.
I know.
Yeah, hey, let me tell you something. Yep. Anyway, it looks like we got a caller. Caller, you with us?
Thank you, caller.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, my Lord, Tom?
It's that guy. it's my co-host. On the battleship.
If you ever pop my mic up, it would be all right.
Oh, but I wanted to talk a little bit myself.
Well, yeah, you did that, man. You did that, Tom. No, I, get Tom out. Kick him out of the way, Kevin.
There you go.
And we're going to talk about today. And me and Tom talked about this the other day on the battleship. Changing headlights. What do you need? And now, and me and Tom has already done talked about this. Some of these cars, you got to damn near take the fender off to get the headlight changed.
Well, and it depends on the vehicle you're talking about. Some of them you do. You pull the whole front end off the car, and you pull the whole front bumper cover off, put it on. Put it on a stand, and then go back and pull the headlight out where you can get to it, or it's in the head or in the front bumper cover. You know, it's just, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy anymore.
Yeah, the old day of just changed, reaching there and pulling the fitting off, and twisting the bulb, pulling the bulb out, putting a new bulb in, twist it back in. No.
Yep.
No, that don't work no more.
A lot of things, though, that people ask me, though, guys, is what do you need to do with your hand? And I tell them, and I don't know what your guys do, wear a latex glove, because if you get that little bit of oil on your fingers on that light bulb, it's going to burn out.
That's some halogen bulbs.
Right. You definitely don't want to touch the bulb, the glass surface of the bulb. As you're putting it in, especially on halogen
what's the other one?
I'm drawing a blank right now.
I know, but I got one in my Lincoln has got a computer module on the back of it.
Right.
I mean, that thing from a dealership was a couple of $100.
Well, you got some of the halon bulbs that are just they're really expensive, to work with, but they burn extremely hot. So any kind of impurities on that's gonna cause them problems. But a lot of those that have the modules in the drivers that actually, you got the bulb, but you also have this module that powers it up and gives it the intensity that it needs. You got to put that in, and it's got to go in a certain way, and you've got to twist this and turn that and lock it in, And if it's not in there right, you can destroy a $1,700-$1,800 headlight assembly.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not worth for the average customer to try and do themselves. I know it's money, and I get it. I really do. But
you gotta have headlights.
You gotta have your headlights, and it's still way cheaper than buying that assembly.
My question to you, Kevin. Mm-hmm. You being the service manager, why in the world would they want to make something so simple so hard?
Well, the engineer's got to have his job, boy.
Well, yeah. The problem you get into, and I learned this a few years back, we had an issue with a brand new truck, the shift mechanism on it. When I say shift mechanism, I'm talking about the handle you pull down to put it in gear, okay? There's several components to that system, but there is the shift mechanism and park pawl inside the transmission, and then there's the cable and the shift lever in the truck, okay? Had two engineers come down looking at this brand-new truck, and I'm talking to them, and it took me about 2 minutes to realize that neither one of those guys had ever looked at any other part of that truck than the part that they were there for. One knew everything that there was to know about that cable and the shift handle, but he couldn't have told you that it had a transmission at the other end of it.
Really?
Okay. And the guy that was, for the inside of the transmission, he knew about all of that, but he had no clue that it had to be turned by something up there on the steering column. Okay. So
damn it, boy.
We have engineers designing their part, and when I say their part, there's somebody designing that bulb in that headlight, but the way it goes in there and locks in, but he ain't the same one that had to figure out how it fits in that car. Okay,
Jarhead. He's an engineer. He's not Jarhead. He's an engineer. He's not mechanically inclined.
Right. So, it's
the days of the shade tree mechanics are just about gone.
Well, I promise you one thing. As soon as we get to all electric vehicles, the average Joe better stay out from under the hood. Okay.
When we go to, like I said a couple weeks ago, when we go to all electric vehicles, we'll be towing a gas powered generator around, charging them bad boys up.
Well, you can work on the gas powered generator, but don't open the hood on the car. Okay. So
I'm gonna buy me one of them big trailers and get me a long extension cord from
right.
Have a great night, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you, Jarhead.
See you, Jarhead, brother. I'm looking forward to seeing you Thursday, first of the month now.
Yep.
All right, now.
All right,
Tom. Take care. You take care of yourself now.
All right,
thank
buddy.
You, buddy. But let's see. We do have another text message here. Somehow I have programmed my 2010 F-150 not to go over 80 miles per hour.
Uh-oh.
I need to go over 80 miles per hour to pass some people on the interstate. Can you tell me how to fix that or tell me who to take it to? Well, I don't know how you could have programmed that to not go over 80 miles an hour. But
is there such a thing?
If you are a programmer or a tuner, you could limit that.
Okay.
Now, if he's been in there and he has changed his specs on the tire sizes or gear ratios or something like that, he might could have done that. But the easiest way to correct that is go back to the Ford place, let them put the factory tune back in it and or check it if you haven't been messing with it. Looks like he's. Well, anyway, we'll get to it after we take a break here. I know we're running up against a break, and this conversation is going to last a little longer. So anyway, we're going to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
All right.
Well, left San Pedro late one night. The moon and the stars were shining bright. Everything went fine up the Grapevine Hill. We was passing cars like they were standing still.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Anyway, back to our 2010 Ford F-150. Was not aware, that this vehicle had that feature that far back, but a lot of our more current vehicles have what they call a teen driver mode, and it's very possible that this one has something like that, that with a specific key, like he's saying, something to do with my key, is that the key that he's using is set up on teen driver mode, and it is limiting the speed of the vehicle to that mile per hour. Yeah. So that's something you could probably look at in your owner's manual. May very well be that you have to have the master key to crank the vehicle with to go in and change those settings and with the key and or passwords. So your teen can't get in there and change them at will. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's just something that, you'll have to look at your owner's manual or check with the Ford place to, and internet's always a good, source for this kind of stuff. But, it's, very possible that that's what's going on. Don't have firsthand experience with the 2010 Ford on that, but, sounds like what's happening.
Now, are you through with that Ford?
Yeah.
Tell us about how this teen driver thing works on the General Motors vehicles that you're talking about.
And our newer vehicles, a lot of our newer vehicles, not all of them, but most of them have a teen driver mode that you can go in and change.
My son might want to get me one.
Yeah.
Slow me down.
It wouldn't be called teen driver mode, but we'll leave that part out.
He don't care.
Okay,
slow the old man down.
Yeah. But anyway, the... it is set up to where key one, key two, key three, whatever, whatever the key that you want to limit. When you crank the car with that vehicle, with the vehicle with that key, it recognizes which key there's using. Okay, so it may not let the radio come on until, or may not even let it drive until you buckle your seatbelt.
Really?
It may not let the radio play at times. It will. It can limit speed. It can alert.
Can it cut the cell phone off until you turn the car off? You know,
and I don't think it has that capability yet. But the
that's something they ought to look into.
You know, well, yeah, and they should. But it can do a lot of good things, and it can alert. If it's a teen driver, it can alert your parents or whoever is letting them drive. Did they go outside of a designated radius?
Uh-oh.
Did they drive faster than they should over the speed limit? Were they aggressive braking? You know, there's a lot of things it can tell. You know, it's a tattletale is all it is. You know, it's somebody watching over your shoulder and
big
telling your parents what you've been doing.
Big brother.
So, you know, probably something I should have had when I was a teenage driver.
I should have had it too. Thank God they didn't have it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'd have stayed in trouble.
I would have never got out.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great thing. You know, hey, you can't replace your kids, okay?
Oh, I know, I know.
Yeah, you know, so it is a great tool for a teen driver. You know, it's
well, there's just so many distractions at this day and time.
There's entirely too many distractions,
right? You know, we've got the phones, and then we've got the damn computers in the cars and on the screens,
right.
And you know, and then all the people that are in the cars with them have got their cell phones on, and they're looking at TikTok and TalkTick and whatever. You know, and all the other programs and movies and stuff is on there, and pictures of whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, it's just too many dang distractions.
Yep. Well, I mean, once you get it's just like me. I was growing up around not wearing seat belts and all this kind of stuff.
Well,
things
didn't
that
have
I
a
should,
seatbelt,
you know,
man.
My first vehicles didn't have them. Okay?
First time I saw a seatbelt was a rope in a race car,
right,
at Lakeview Speedway in 1952. It was a rope for his seatbelt.
Exactly.
And he had a leather belt around the door so the door wouldn't pop open.
You better hope you know how to untie it if you got to get in.
Don't you know? Have a good sharp Barlow knife.
Right. But
how many people know what a Barlow knife is?
But anyway, I'm notorious for not wearing my seatbelt. I'll tell on myself, okay? My son, on the other hand, who's 31 years old now.
Probably a good-looking kid. I saw him on Facebook the other day.
Yep. Got a really good-looking grandbaby.
Ooh, so thank God he don't look after you, buddy.
Yeah.
Mine either.
But it's anyway, he when he was coming up, always wore a seatbelt.
Good.
Yeah, when he got in the car, I made him put a seatbelt on.
Oh, well, always do. You don't do what I do as I say do. Yeah.
It's second nature for him. He won't get in the car without a seatbelt.
That's good.
Okay, and that's great. I love that fact.
Yeah.
You know, and I try to be better with mine, you know, and try and do it more often. But
are we just hard
for him? He does it because it's just
ingrained.
It's just ingrained into him. So
He don't know any better.
He doesn't know the difference. You know, he climbs in and he puts it on. It's
I was trying to remember what car had the first seatbelt in it that I owned. You know, maybe
it wasn't a standard thing until the late '60s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So you know, it was somewhere in that area, but. Anyway, you know, we can teach these habits, and if you teach a teen driver from day one not to speed, not to, you know, not to put it in gear until you put your seatbelt on, all these things that the teen driver mode is making them do.
And pray that they're not inhibited by some kind of pills or pot or drug or booze or whatever.
Well, you know, and I've heard rumors, and not necessarily rumors, but the current administration is going to require the manufacturers to have some kind of defeat device in a vehicle that
really
kind of like a breathalyzer. Yeah.
Really?
To make sure the person is not impaired, that's going to drive. Oh,
that's going to be full, ain't there?
Yeah.
they're going to have to get buses from all these juke joints and these bars on
right,
the way home. At
right.
Night.
So it's yeah. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
so,
I want to see that.
Yeah, but let's see. We had another one from Michelle. That do you do oil changes for other brands UJ other than the Chevrolets, which we do. We change oil on pretty much all makes and models.
We try and keep
filters around for everything. We may have to run out and get one for if you have something that's not real common. But we keep most of that around. So we absolutely do. We do all makes and models. Stay busy with our oil changes. Last couple weeks with spring breaks happening and people traveling for Easter, we've been pretty busy on our oil changes here over the last couple weeks and hadn't slowed down yet. But that's what we're here for. Absolutely.
Well, so, guys, I'll tell you from facts that they do a good job. And the guys that they have working on that assembly in that those stalls are it's not, my car ain't the first one they ever seen. I mean, they know what they're looking for because they're experienced. And I know I had my car in there, and they found a transmission leak on my vehicle that I didn't even have any idea that I had, they could have saved me, $5,000-$6,000 because they caught it.
Yep, absolutely. Well, that's the whole point of having a service at a facility like ours anyway. Sounds like it's time for us to end our show for tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Remkel, and I will be back next week.
And a big hoorah to all of you devil dogs and veterans out there.
I got me 10 forward gears and a Georgia overdrive.